double adapter this time, so that way I can always slot in. Yeah, it's just, yeah, otherwise, if you don't have a power thing, you're screwed. B-Day's daughter, you know, she's like 12 and she's doing a presentation. Right. I was telling Holmes, and Holmes was like, yeah, you got work that you rejected, you got beaten by a 12-year-old. Found out about that bogus access point thing.
Yeah.
Now I just don't know what to do anymore. I think I don't know. Oh, I've got private public keys, but there's one SSH session I was doing that was with a password, and that one potentially could have been compromised. So I called up. It would have given the message.
Yeah.
Ah, but that's weird because my student Peter, he noticed it, and he came to tell me about it. And he said, "What was weird is he didn't get the message." doesn't give that message that said the host key changed, even though he'd seen the IP address vary on it. So we don't. I know enough to know that I don't know enough. The problem with these script kitting all these root kits and stuff is they're smart enough. I'd like to learn how to write USB drives. Thank you.
cubes drawn in real time.
Yeah.
The problem is, but even if I hold it, no, I can't really hold it perfectly still, but
any motion, even when the camera is completely stable, the pixels still jitter, and it's enough to cause the pose estimate to be a bit off. So yeah, this is actually a GPL toolkit that you can use. Basically, you just throw patterns in there. You actually run a capturing tool that you program in the pattern, and it captures the little writing inside it. Sort of 16 by 16 sampling grid. So you can't put a laser on the end of it and use it to point at something. You can use like a crosshair, but you can't use it to get it off. Yeah. Even 1 degree is enough to miss the blind wall, so that's one of the limitations of it. Oh, we're not giving them that. We're not using vision tracking for the defense stuff. We're actually, for the defense project, we want us to have these rifles that have got sensors in them. We're going to get plastic gun stocks and put a sensor that will bring it up to your shoulder and put it in place. The HMD will change to a scope.
Right.
And so it'll actually, and it also turns out that when soldiers shoot, they aim like this. And it's always linked to their head. So you can use the tracking of the head to avoid putting tracking on the gun.
Yep.
So if they actually do this with the gun, they won't do anything. It's an assumption we put in that it's going to be quite important. The problem is, though, is if we have to do it properly, it'll cost that. It'll be the size of a VCR.
Yeah. All the difficult problems
inside the top end tool that I've got. So tiny, and it's got hardcore NVIDIA, hardcore Centrino. You can't buy an embedded computer that does what we have. So we're going to rip this into bits. Build a little case, pop instead of putting it together. And then the thing with the short checker is I've got one, it works. And I can buy one in the notebook, and it does everything I want. And if I buy anything else, it's too risky. I need it to work. So, yeah. Demos and stuff like that, so
yeah.
See what we're up to. should I?
Guys, just a quick public service announcement. Just been asked to remind you about the Hackfest competition, which closes on Thursday night. If you go to hackfest.conference.linux.conf.au for more information. Thanks.
The mic is quite directional, so you need to be right in front of here.
If I talk from here, will that work?
Can people hear Wayne if he talks like that?
I can talk to the whole room. Like, that's how I normally talk. But,
can you guys back hear him?
Can everyone hear me?
All right, okay. Might work. Just don't do your voice.
Sorry?
Don't do your voice.
Oh, no, I have to flex right.
Okay. Hi, my name's Bob Edwards. I'm one of the organisers. I'd just like to introduce Wayne, who's going to be talking about wearable computers. Before we do, I just wanted to quickly remind people that the Hackfest closes tomorrow evening. There's two wonderful prizes for the Hackfest, so you really don't want to miss out on that. If you have an entry to put in, it'd be great. The details on how to do that are on the website, the LCA205 website, so please go have a look. You don't want to miss out on those prizes if you've got an entry for it. Also, just wanted to remind you that we have had some problems with wireless today in terms of rogue access points appearing and performing man-in-the-middle attacks and stuff. So if you are using wireless, please be very careful about agreeing to SSH keys that may have changed or something like that, because somebody might actually be snarfing you. Just be aware that the wireless is really very insecure and it's a best effort service and it may not be doing exactly what you hope to do. There's plenty of plug-in points around in the terminal server room and in the foyer, so please make the most of those if you can. Anyway, enough of that, and over to Wayne. Thank you very much, Wayne. And he's got some extremely interesting gadgets down here to look at. So, yeah, should be a great talk. Thank you, Wayne.
Hey, everyone. Okay, so my name's Wayne. I'm from the University of South Australia, Wearable Computer Lab. And my job, I'm a computer science researcher, and I do research into mobile computers that are taken outdoors, augmented reality, 3D graphics, and so forth. So my talk today is called Building User Interfaces with Video and 3D Graphics for Fun and Profit. So what are we going to talk about today? So we're going to be talking for 3 hours. I'm going to give a brief introduction to 3D graphics, virtual and augmented reality. So I'm going to talk a bit about some of the research that I've done in the past using the stuff that I do. We're going to go in detail and talk about OpenGL under Linux with Linux-specific issues and displaying live video under X-Windows. There's a lot of stuff that isn't really documented that well and it's hard to learn and everything like that. So I'm going to give you all the years of my experience that I've spent messing around with this stuff so that you don't have to hassle with it. We're going to talk about doing video capture with Video for Linux and Firewire. Once again, this is something that's not documented very well and it seems that people either know it or they don't know it and it seems to be hard to find it out. So after many years of pain, I've sort of got there. We're going to talk about doing your own 3D vision tracking. There's a library called AR Toolkit, which is GPL, and there's a library called OpenCV, which is BSD based, and we're going to talk about using those libraries to do things indoors. So we're also going to talk about building custom hardware devices. So, you know, you don't always want to use a keyboard and a mouse to control your computer. Sometimes you want something different. So what possibilities are there, what can we do, and so forth. I'm also going to be demoing this monster off here, which is my backpack. I'll talk about that more in a minute. We may do some demos in between the break. Afterwards, there's a quiz night session. Probably after the quiz night session, we might have a play with it outdoors, and I'll see how we go. So basically, the point of this tutorial is to show you the kinds of cool applications that you can build at home yourself. You don't have to spend $30,000 on a backpack like I have. You can, you know, using a webcam and a laptop, you can do a lot of this stuff. You can do really interesting, cool applications that most people haven't thought of before. So my job here is, as part of this tutorial, is to kind of show what kind of possibilities there are and give people some new ideas so that we're not restricted just to a keyboard and mouse like we are right now. The other thing is, this tutorial is kind of similar to what I gave at LCA in Adelaide last year. So if you did attend it last year, then, you know, there might not be too much new stuff. However, I've given talks at most LCAs. This is completely different than all the other ones. Every year I give a different talk about something. So previously I've talked about my modeling system and the Quake game and things like that. I'm going to quickly skim over some of those things, but most of this is going to be going through code and talking about libraries and stuff like that. So let's continue. What is this tutorial not about? Well, what I'm not going to talk about is how to install Linux, how to do basic OpenGL, how to do basic C programming. I'm going to assume you have some of these skills. They're reasonably easy to learn. I'm going to tell you where you can find out more about that. What I am going to focus on, though, is Linux-specific issues. If I've been burnt really badly with something, I'm going to tell you about it. And I'm going to sort of skim over the bits that are obvious or easy or whatever. So we have a three-hour talk. We've got 1.5 hours of me talking, half an hour break, another 1.5 hours of talking. We'll have questions at the end of each section. Feel free to butt in if you've got a question, but I do want to try to keep things moving, so try to save other questions for later unless it's directly relevant to the slide. I have prepared 45 pages of notes for this course, so if you actually go to the URL, which I'll show you in a minute, I have a
PDF that I've prepared, which has a set of pile of notes that I've written. Unfortunately, I don't have enough time to talk about everything that you need, so I've prepared these notes, which has a much more detailed explanation of everything I'm doing here. So between the notes and the slides, everything is here somewhere. So I'd encourage you to go and download those. They're on my webpage, and so you can see we've got table of contents and all the stuff in it. So it goes in a lot of painstaking detail about everything we're going to be doing here today. The URL for the slides is www.tinmyth.net/LCA2005. It's also at the bottom of every slide. As I said, read the tutorial notes. I've spent a lot of time on this and I really would like people to use them because there's a lot of good information in there. Okay, and there's also example code. All of the snippets of code that I'm going to go through are all on there. They're all GPL so that you can chop them up and do whatever you want to. So I provided sort of a sample kit of code to get you started. The point of this tutorial, I have a policy which is lazy like a fox. And so I really don't like spending a lot of time horsing around doing things that I shouldn't have to do. If I can get a distro that does it for me, I'll do it that way. I'm tired of playing with things that I don't have to play with. So the problem I have is I've got lots of projects that I work on but not enough time. So I'm really trying to streamline things. So we're going to talk about areas that are poorly documented or difficult to play around with due to their complexity. I'm also going to talk about how to build things on the cheap without having to spend too much money, because a lot of the backpack stuff that we've done, a lot of that has been done without any funding. So you go in dumpsters and pull out old computer parts and rip them apart and build things with them. So these are the kind of things we're going to talk about here. And we're going to teach what things you can do at home. So to start off with, we'll give an introduction to immersive 3D graphics. So my research work is focused on what are called immersive 3D applications. So I typically use a head-mounted display. So you can see here we've got a photo. That's a Sony Glasstron. They stopped selling those about 3 or 4 years ago. This one's 800 by 600, two screens in it. This costs about $6,000. And this little wire here that comes off it, it's got like 50 little wires inside it, and if you break that cable, it's all finished, and you can't fix it. So the Sony Glasstron's a really nice display, and that's one that we use. I have another one here called IO Glasses, which I have, which costs about $1,500. These ones are quite good. They just came out. They're 800 by 600 displays. You can code on them. Like, the previous displays were television quality, and they're really blurry and freaks your eyes out and stuff like that. So these ones you actually can code on for a couple hours. Not that you'd want to, but you can. So I use head-mounted displays for everything. There's still a lot of work you can do on a monitor, though. So later on, we'll go through some applications of that. Just to give a quick explanation as to what virtual and augmented reality is, virtual reality is this example here. It's where you have completely immersively generated environments. So the computer generates everything. If the power fails, you can't see nothing. You've got to take the helmet off. So this is a screenshot of me wearing my backpack outside looking at a virtual table, and you're completely locked off from the environment. And it's very easy to walk into a tree because you can't see anything. So it's kind of dangerous. And if there's cars going past you, you're in trouble too, so you've got to watch out. The display I have, you can sort of see down through the corners, so you end up walking like this when you're not using the computer, because you do have to be careful, so it's an interesting little thing. Augmented reality is this picture over here. So you can see here we've got the same table, but you can see I've got real grass and real rocks and real trees in the background. What's happening here is the computer has a video camera which captures the real world in. So this is the helmet the person wears, and the video camera films the real world, sends it into the software. The software draws 3D graphics over the top of it and then presents it to the user via the display. So in this example, you can see a bit better. So you can see the grass. The problem is it's a little bit blurry, it's a little bit slow, and there's this... That's correct. It's not stereo. No, we don't do stereo. Stereo doesn't work outdoors because it only tends to work within a couple of meters of the person's head. Beyond about 10 meters or so, stereo effects become almost negligible, and you don't really gain much out of it, so we don't do stereo. The other problem is processing dual video streams is a lot of work, and getting a laptop to generate two video streams is also difficult. I've talked to some people who are doing hacks on Dell laptops. Dell actually, the Inspiron 8100 actually had a feature in its chipset that no one knew about where it could do stereo interlacing, all this kind of stuff, but the drivers for it didn't really support it properly and it was all kind of dodgy. So we don't tend to do stereo because it's too hard.
But anyway, when you're outside, you can see through the helmet. The catch is, though, is there's this area outside where you can sort of see through the corner of your eyes. There's a display in front of you, but there's this whole black region where you can't see anything, and it's still very easy to walk into a tree or a car, so you still do have to be quite careful. And if you walk over a set of steps, you have to pay attention. You can't just run around and do crazy stuff. So anyway, so that's virtual and augmented reality. So I just wanted to define that so we can understand what we're talking about here. There's two ways you can do augmented reality. So my research work is focused on augmented reality. And the way augmented reality works is you combine the physical and real and virtual worlds together. The way optical AR works is, say glass point is meant this way. You have the real world, you have a half-silver mirror, and then you have an LCD display. And the half-silver mirror combines the images together, 50% real world, 50% virtual world. So you end up with a picture that looks kind of like this one here. So you can see the image is ghosted over the top of the display. This one doesn't work very well in bright sunlight. When you look at the image, if there's sunlight coming right at you, it tends to just wipe out the entire image. You can't see anything. There's actually this really cool display you can get called a microvision micro-optical, which uses a laser beam to paint images onto your retina. It's actually, they claim it's eye-safe, but the thing, well, the weird part is if you put the thing on and you use it, it's kind of cool, but you take it off and you kind of feel weird. I'm not sure why, but it's not the kind of thing I'd want to use a lot. The neat part is when you actually talk to the sales guys, like, oh, it's really great. You can actually overlay data over the top of the sun. Right? So when you're looking at the sun, it's bright enough that it can draw over the top of it. Now, anything that's brighter than the sun, obviously, is probably bad. So, I don't know. But anyway, so this is optical overlay. I don't really like it because it's bad for demos. No one can see what's going on except the person wearing the helmet. So the alternative is what we call video AR. So video AR is where you have a computer-generated graphic, you have the real world is captured by a video camera, fed into a computer, and the computer combines the two images together and then renders it out to the display. You can actually do this using a technique called chroma keying, which is where you actually buy a box that takes two video signals and merges them together. So you can offload it out of the computer. We did some work doing that. Doing it with FireWire cameras and SVJ output is much better quality though. So those images I shot before, they're all from video overlay. And the nice part about it is you can flip open the laptop screen on the backpack and everyone can see what's going on. So I like it because it makes good demos. It's easy to record. If you want to make a video over one of these systems, you've got to put a video camera inside the helmet, which is quite tricky. So that's video AR. So we're going to talk a lot about video AR today because that's the kind of thing we can do indoors without having to buy a helmet. So it tends to be cheaper to implement. You can buy displays. So for about $1,500, you can buy one of these IO glasses displays in Australia, and they're really good quality. I use them for everything, and we beat this thing up and take it on airplanes and everything, and it's really reliable, so I'm pretty happy with it. Although I'm sure it'll break for me today when I try to do some demos. But anyway, that's the summary. So what I do, my research work is focused on going outdoors. So at a previous LCA, I gave a talk about how we go outside through 3D modeling. So you can take the backpack outside, you throw some gloves on your hands. This is the backpack I had in 2001 and 2002. That thing weighed about 15, 16 kilograms. And it's got everything in there. It's got a laptop, GPS, batteries, the whole lot. This one was really cool, though, because it was almost strong enough you could drive a car over it because it was made of this really tough polycarbonate, but it makes it quite heavy. So I do a lot of work with mobile 3D user interfaces, 3D modeling. So imagine 3D Studio Max in your backyard where you can reach out with your hands and grab stuff and move it around. That's the kind of stuff I did my PhD on. The thing with 3D, so let's get into the tutorial now, is sort of 3D is a much more challenging problem than 2D. 2D environments are kind of a solved problem, not quite, but they've been around for a long time. We've had mice for like 20 or something, 30 years or whatever, and we've sort of standardized on the WIMP model, Windows icons, mouse and pointer, and most environments are kind of similar. If you look at Mac OS X and Windows XP and GNOME and KDE and all that, they have a similar kind of design philosophy to them, and everyone sort of copies each other's ideas to improve desktops. And they've gotten better, but it's the same kind of way of doing things. Now, when you're in a 3D environment, the mistake you could make is go, okay, well, let's just put a trackball mouse on the side of the backpack, like one of these, and then you can just move the cursor around with a little ball. The problem with that is if you've got three-dimensional data, you really want to convey depth, and people think in terms of their body. And when you're walking around, you've got the world's greatest user interface. You have the ability to move your head, to see data, you can use your hands, and that's so much better than using a keyboard and a mouse. So when you're stepping outside or in a 3D environment, you really do have to rethink the whole user interface again. And pretty much you've got to start from scratch. You really don't want to, you don't want to try to retrofit a 2D system on. So you don't really want to use 2D input devices to solve 3D kinds of tasks. And using the body and so forth gives you so many opportunities to do all kinds of interesting interactions. So we're going to talk about some examples of how to do it. One of the ways I control my system is using gloves. So we have these gloves that the user puts on, and they've got little copper pads on the end of the fingertips. And so the copper pads sense when a person presses their fingers against different things, and then there's a strip of menus on the side that show the different commands that are available. And so you can reach out and grab things, and you can pick objects up and move them around. There are these little markers on here. We're going to later on show you how you can use a GPL vision tracking software system to track these things. And basically, as I move my hands around in front of me, the system knows where I'm pointing at all times. So you can use your hands to control the computer, Minority Report style. So you would have seen that thing on Slashdot a couple of days ago where John Unkerfuller, I think, from MIT, was designing some work for Raytheon using gloves to control a computer. Gloves aren't the ideal interface for everything. Desktops still rock for using a scroll wheel and browsing through image data. Gloves are really good if you're interacting with 3D environments, but in the case of Minority Report, he did a lot of work that he could have very easily done with a mouse, so you know, don't always go for gloves just because they're cool. So this is a user interface that I designed for my computer to use outside. So I've got a video that I'll show. And so the way it works, all these photos I'm showing to you are actually just screenshots of the system running. So this is exactly what the person sees when they're walking around outdoors. So what I'll do is I'll just fire up the first video. Now, MPlayer's got issues where it's chopping the bottom of my video off, so... video... So this video here shows a person manipulating a virtual tree outdoors. So they're reaching out with their hands. Pick a tree up, you can scale it and resize it and so forth, and it's all fully done in real time. You can see as I turn my head around, the graphics are locked in space. You can pick an object up, rotate it, resize it, you can click on it and delete it. You can see as I turn around, there are other objects in the environment, and so as you move in real time, the GPS is pumping position data and orientation data to the computer, and the computer updates the display. So I'll just show that once more so we can talk about it a bit more. So you can see there we've got the fiducial marker. It's got a little cursor that it's overlaid over my thumb to indicate that it knows where my hands are. And, you know, this is so much more intuitive than using a mouse. And we've got these menu strips here which have been chopped off, which are the commands we can pick. And we've got status information about how the software's running and so forth. So that's an example of augmented reality outside. So later on, after this, we'll probably go outside and people can try this out. Next thing. So when I presented this stuff at LCA many moons ago, someone goes, oh, it'd be really cool if you put like Quake on it or something. And so then I pressed next on there and went, voila. So what we did in 2000, we had a student project where we got the GPL Quake source code, and we simply just removed all the keyboard and mouse stuff and shoehorned in this code that read a UDP packet that had X, Y, Z heading control in it. And so it's a really easy hack. We used optical overlay for that system. The videos didn't look all that great. What we did in about 2001 or two, once we started doing the FireWire stuff, is we then hacked the Quake source to put the video background in. I actually had a paper at a previous LCA where we discussed in detail how we did that, so you might want to read that. But basically, we used stencil buffering in the video card to sort of fill the video in. Quake has a really weird way of doing its rendering, so we had to use some tricks in OpenGL to do that. So do go to my website and read that paper from the previous LCA if you're interested in that technique. So you can go outside, virtual monsters from Quake. We actually recolored them so that you could see them. Quake's a very dark and gloomy kind of game, and it doesn't make sense to have dark and gloomy objects when you're walking outside where it's nice and sunny. So we recolored them all to make them all nice and bright. So you can see here the soldiers all yellow and orange and stuff like that. It makes it kind of look pretty as well. So I'll just fire up the video. Here is a screenshot. I think it's freaking out because the sound card's not working. Okay, so this here is me outside. It's got monsters running around, and bang, bang, and the monsters are, you know, in place. Some of these monsters are actually behind a visible wall. So you can see there, the monsters run around as I turn. You know, as I move through the environment, it moves in the Quake game. So the physical world and the virtual Quake game are linked together using the tracking system in the backpack. So doing the Quake mod was really easy. I mean, the Quake source code is reasonably well written. And one of the other things is, I have this on my website as an FAQ question, but you get these people going, oh, you know, how come you didn't modify Unreal Tournament? Or insert favorite game here? To be honest, it doesn't really matter. You could get Quake 3 and modify it, and it would look exactly the same. Because we actually turned off all the lighting effects. We turned off all the fog. Everything, like, computer graphics is all about cheating. It's about the art of rendering something that the person thinks is real. If you get Quake and you boost the gamma correction up, you'll see all the artifacts that they've concealed by using darkness and lighting effects and so forth. And, like, a lot of games these days, they're kind of improving, but they're using a lot of tricks to get the improvements, and a lot of those tricks you have to turn off when you're outside to sort of remove the dark effects and whatever to make it render right. So there's no real advantage to using any other engine, so we just use the Quake stuff. The other problem with the Quake thing is it's got a number of limitations in the game itself. It can't support independently tracked weapons, so you fire it with this yellow gun, which I'm going to talk about how to build your own later. So this gun is not aimed whatsoever. The game is controlled with your head.